This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
And here we go, hour three. It is a great day for talk radio. It's the Monday edition. Of course, overnight and into tomorrow, Danny was just mentioning some snow. This is the dreary time of year, right? Not yet into the Christmas season, because you can shut down December pretty much. It's, you know, Christmas parties here, there, and everywhere, and there's just a more relaxed attitude. But right now, everybody's hunkering down and ready to greet the new season and the arrival of snow. And that does present its problems here in the city, as we know, when it does get to the cold snap in the winter months. Folks on the street, people who are without shelter, obviously this becomes of some consequence and concern. And when we've got asylum seekers also coming into the city, as we know, since 2017, as they've been making their way into the country, they've had to be housed somewhere. At not insignificant cost, too, I should point out. I think the city's already asked the province or the feds for something like $64.5 million, where, you know, you have to clothe and feed the people as well. And now we've got a story where there's a hotel at 400 and 401, which is called the Toronto Plaza Hotel, and it's been housing newly arrived refugees and the homeless from the Fred Victor Mission. And so the city is looking into purchasing the property. And the property is, a distressed property. It's got some situation. It's 199 rooms, but about 35 have got mold. And there are people, about 500 of these homeless and asylum seekers, who are living there right now. But the property may be sold to somebody else. And if they scoop it, what do we do with those 500 some odd people? Our shelter system is bursting at the seams. So this is the conundrum, whether the city steps up and purchases the property out of receivership, if I got it right. Let's find out exactly what's in play here. Stephen Holliday is the deputy mayor and the counselor for Ward 3 Etobicoke Centre, and he's joined the Oakley Show at Global News Radio 640 Toronto. Stephen, how are you this afternoon?
Oh, I'm doing great.
Well, listen, help me out with this story then. We are at present, if I'm not mistaken, putting up about 500 homeless people and asylum seekers in the Toronto Plaza Hotel?
Yeah, we've got people in several hotels. I believe this is one of them. And that's because the shelters that you think about every day are full. So the city's backup plan is we have these contracts with various organizations to put people into the overflow. And as we've talked about before in the show and in your lead-in, we're at one of those times with asylum seekers and a change in season where we've got an enormous stress on the shelter system, and we are looking to those outside providers like hotels to get a roof over people's heads.
All right, but right now there is some talk or scuttlebutt that this is a hotel that might be on the market should the city pick it up for whatever the cost, so that we can continue to operate as a de facto shelter.
Yeah, I mean, that's the story that's been in the media, and I have to admit, I was surprised to hear it as well. I don't know all the comings and goings of what the real estate department does, but I don't ever recall a council discussion on this particular matter. So that signals to me that it may have been some early looks at perhaps an opportunity coming up. And again, I'm looking at what the reports are saying, but it sounds like this hotel was in a financial position. They were looking to sell, and I guess some folks in the real estate arm of the government were trying to find out if it was a deal to buy. And I will add, there's more to the hotel than just the hotel. There's quite a large property, and perhaps the thought was is that there may be use for it for many civic purposes, one being a shelter.
All right, but then the property's value is something that has been drawn into question, I guess, different appraisals. I think the individual who's got it right now, or it's been put into receivership, but the last owner picked it up a few years back for $17.5 million. The market value now, according to the lawyer of the receiver, is something like $35 million. You think this is the business the city should be in?
Yeah, I'm pretty cautious about land transaction and in particular properties that are close to the intersection of a highway interchange. Those lands are around a highway and aren't necessarily easy to use for a lot of different things. So I look to the advice of the real estate people to figure out if this is a good buy or not a good buy, and the reports say in the media that that there isn't necessarily a deal going forward. And I guess I have to admit, some of the condition assessments that were reported on in this hotel, I was thinking about that movie with Tom Hanks called The Money Pit. I wonder if we need to, if it's a good deal to buy a building that may be in condition that you've got to put a lot more money into it, and whether or not that's a bargain.
But it speaks to the fact that if we're in this particular stage of looking at properties near a highway, as you say, the 400 and the 401, the Toronto Plaza Hotel, as a potential shelter, we're obviously up against the wall here. Is the province or is the federal government at all stepping up to bail us out?
I've seen nothing new in the last little while, and I would imagine once council resumes, we're going to be continuing to put the pressure on them. This problem spans far beyond the city of Toronto's borders, but as we know, being the economic center of Canada and being the big, busy city, it's natural that anyone that comes into the country wants to come here. But that means that we're taking quite a burden on something that is at an international level or an international issue.
The other thing is that the people who might buy this may be reluctant to set it up or rent the space to the city for asylum seekers and the homeless. So that does put 500 people somewhere, doesn't it?
It does. It's a possibility, but I don't think it's something that's going to happen overnight. Real estate transactions take time. And let's face it, it's a good contract to have with the city. You've got a stable demand of rooms that are being rented on a long term. And I have to think that there is some business model out there for someone that wants to carry on doing that.
All right. My understanding is the city is renting the rooms at $50 a night. It's a discounted rate plus food costs. And because that's, again, part of an extension of our shelter system. So $50 a night is not exorbitant, but it also speaks to the issue that we're putting people up and there's a cost affix to this because they're flowing into the city. We'll leave it. We'll find out. I hope, we can, by way of a follow-up, find out where we go with this. And insofar as the other levels of government stepping up and bailing us out, not that we don't understand, there's obviously only one taxpayer, so we're still paying for all of this. I did want to get around to one final thought on this pilot project that was implemented a year ago along King Street, mandating that no cars, at least you can only go a block and then you got to make the first exit to the right. Businesses have complained, or some have specifically, but now we're hearing that according to the city's data, at least, this pilot project is a raving success and a lot of people would like to see it made permanent. How do you feel?
Well, I don't agree with making that permanent. I never have. I was just down there last week, and it just seems to be the same old King Street as it always was, sans the cars. But, the latest press release that's been celebrated by many people, and I'll add there are many people out there that it doesn't matter what the data says, they'd be happy to take the cars off King Street, talks about King Street being busier in July and August with pedestrians and transit riders, and I would say I hope so. It's the middle of summer. They did say the sales are up, under 1%, but I guess so if it's prime tourist season and you're comparing it to the baseline, which was last November. So, this data has been put out by the city over the years and every couple of months, and I invite people to look at the details in there because there are some pluses, but there's also some minuses. And I don't think this is a slam dunk in any way, and it certainly doesn't help anyone that lives out in the West End where I am. I heard it through the election. People liked King Street as a way to get into the city, and now that option is gone.
All right. Let's just then back out and take it one item at a time. When you talked about the data in terms of sales, the baseline was last November. I thought it was year over year, but you correct me if I'm wrong, because I understand that even then it was minuscule because, as you say, less than 1% growth in transactions or the amount that restaurants and bars along that strip have experienced. That's, I guess, the Moneris people who have done their data and the crunch. And right. Even then, we're told sometimes that if people are paying by cash, it doesn't get calibrated. This is all done on credit card receipts and so on and so forth. But nonetheless, it's lower than the surrounding area or other parts of the city have enjoyed in terms of the same period that was judged by the same kinds of transactional records. So they're hurting, actually, on King Street relative to other parts of the city.
Yeah, I believe it. Remember, the Moneris data doesn't capture all of the different types of businesses. It's the ones that are using their services, which is only a percentage. And you're right. There are some stark differences between the overall average. But I would add, you know, again, a lot of these were bars and patios that had this opportunity to create extensions into the street. And I would have thought we would have seen a really big uptake in business over those summer patio months. And I just don't see it in the city report in front of me.
All right. But what about the commute times? This is the other thing that's being lauded. It's really increased. In fact, I had somebody on earlier today. They're from the, let me get this straight, where the group was, because I think it was the City Place Residents Association, Gary Peters. And he was telling me that the commute times have been decreased by 50%. And which, again, you know, if it's 4 minutes, suddenly it's, you know, two or six, whatever the case may be.
Right.
Have the commute times been speeded up significantly?
Well, if you take the cars away, one would expect those streetcars to move through a little bit quicker, and they have. They've gone up by a few minutes. But remember, that's only in the small blocks that are in the pilot area. It doesn't take into account the overall length of the route. Forgive me, I don't remember the entire length of the route, but it's upwards of an hour. So a few minutes on a very long travel time is a savings, but the big political question is a plus of that level worth the trade-off of removing it as an auto route and taking away that parking and changing that street forever?
Yeah, I think it's 2.6 kilometers, if memory serves.
Right, and then there's the overall length of King Street,
right,
which is much, much longer. So we're talking about this little section in the middle, and naturally, yes, those cars are going to move faster. And that's during rush hour, don't forget as well, but we are on a 24/7 hour clock. I'm not sure if you're seeing those numbers in the middle of the day or in the evening or on weekends.
Do you know if parking revenues are down appreciably?
I don't. It's not in front of me immediately. I do know there are less parking spaces, but possibly things have balanced out with other parking lots that are nearby. But again, it's one of those psychological barriers that if you're fearful of trying to find a place to park your car, you might think twice about visiting the area.
Stephen, what's your sense? Because my spidey sense says this pilot project, it's gone a year now. It looks like the mayor has supported it. Correct me if I'm wrong. And then you've got all these other advocates, including the local councillor, Joe Cressy, firmly behind it. A done deal? I mean, or could there be, if not a reversal of this, but some tweak to it? Like, for example, after 7 p.m., free it up again for cars to enter that zone, you know, just off the high commute hours. Would that be something that you could promote?
Even I could agree that there could be some tweaks done to King Street to improve it, but I certainly would like to see a large tweak, such as opening it back up on the non-peak hours, to really help those businesses and to maintain it as a travel route. But you never know with this council, and my spidey sense is certainly tingling, because my guess is that in the future we will see other streets where this is tried. But we'll wait and see what council proposes.
All right. And the street furniture, by the way, which was supposed to be kind of the trade-off, you're going to have a beautified environment there. That's done very little to attract people, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's not doing a whole lot for me tonight. I'm not sure I want to sit out on a patio with a thick coat on.
Right. Or something constructed out of milk cartons to look like it's urban art. I didn't get it either, but there you go. All right. And so this is a fight that's not over yet, and you believe there's still some wiggle room to maybe tweak it, as we say, and make some of these shopkeepers and bartenders and stuff like that whole.
There's always hope, and there's always hope for cooler heads to prevail and find ways to make it better.
Are we talking about the same city council now?
Oh, come now.
Okay.
It's always work.
All right. By the way, how do you explain the mayor, Tory, seems firmly behind the pilot and would like to see it permanent?
Hey, look, you know, the mayor is an intelligent guy, and he reads the reports, and there is quite a bit in there that celebrates the victories, and his lens is a little different than mine. And, you know, I'll go back to, I'm a West End representative, and I heard it at the door during the election. There were people that lost this as their way to get into the city. They really like driving along King Street to visit the downtown, and, you know, that weighs a lot heavier in how I balance these things out, but everyone has their approach. And as long as they're taking time to read about it, you know, I feel a lot better about the decision-making process.
Great to talk, as always. Really appreciate your time, and we'll do it again real soon.
Thank you.
Okay. Stephen Holliday, Deputy Mayor, Councilor Ward 3, Etobicoke Center, on this King Street pilot project. 1 year already. It seems like it's been five. I've just heard, you know, it's not without warrant that these people who got restaurants down there, I visited some of them, and it did look like there were streetcars zipping by at like 8, 9 o'clock at night, three quarters empty. And when they say, and there was no vehicular traffic, it did look like there was, when it should have been a bustling hive of activity, and it wasn't. These are Saturday nights in the summer. So I'll take that as my first-hand account, my primary source, and I'm with Holliday in this one. I think there needs to be some tweaking done. I wouldn't say status quo going forward and make it permanent. That is my opinion. By the way, we've got a legal opinion that was made earlier today between the NHL and over 100 retired hockey players who sued the league over their head injuries. Joe Neuberger is going to join us at the bottom of the hour. He's our legal expert on that and the fact that the University of Toronto has put the kibosh on smoking of any kind, tobacco, cannabis, and vaping won't be permitted on their three campuses as of January 2019. How legal is that? Can they do that? And where would you look for some kind of reprieve if you wanted to have, you know, a quick toke, you know, a butt? People still want to do that, you know? I mean, these are now legal substances, or even to vape, and they're going to not allow that? Zero tolerance? We'll find out what Mr. Neuberger has to say at the bottom of the hour as the Oakley Show continues at Global News Radio 640 Toronto.